Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Well, back to normal, huh? Kind of. So I don't know exactly where the temple Bhagavatam class got up to, but I know where I completed. And my thought was to continue where I left off in the morning class. The morning class is from Canto 10, Chapter 37, continuing, well, verse 12 and 13, I believe, go together, and then 14, beginning of 10, 37, 14. The scene is Narada has visited Kamsa, and Kamsa received him very nicely. And Narada said, "You please me very much. I'm going to tell you a secret. The secret is, you know, that eighth child of Devaki was prophesied to kill you. Well, Vasudev didn't tell you this, but he took the eighth child, the boy, son, to Gokula, to Braja, no, Gokula, and brought back a female child. So the eighth child is over there in Gokula, and protect your backside. Kamsa, you're really smart. You know how to take care of yourself. But I'll make a suggestion. You can send some further demons to try to kill him, but otherwise, just bring him here to Mathura and kill him right here in Mathura. And the way that you can do that is invite him to come for a bow festival and so forth, and, you know, make it a nice religious ceremony, and he'll come. And Kamsa grabbed his sword and, "I'm going to kill Vasudev." He said, no. Don't kill Vasudev for two reasons. You don't have to worry about Vasudev. You have to worry about the eighth child of Vasudev and Devaki. That's where your attention should go. And if you kill Vasudev, then Krishna may run away. And so you don't want that. You want to kill Krishna. So don't kill Vasudev. And, you're smart. Just carry on. So, why Narada did like that is another thing. And, put Vasudev and Devaki in shackles in prison with the understanding that by that, knowing that Krishna will be even more inspired to come and free his dear devotee, mother and father, Vasudev and Devaki. So Kamsa sent Keshi and Vyomasura and called his ministers and arranged for the details of a festival so it would look nice and Krishna would be encouraged to come. And Chanur and Mushtika, you take care of Krishna if he gets this far. And Kuvalyapida, this giant elephant, elephant trainer, you greet him at the gate when he comes to the gate of the city and destroy him. And he had a multi-tiered plan to kill Krishna, and he was very afraid. And so he was very Krishna conscious. Trying to remember where the verse is. Narada explains, in my opinion, one's mind goes to Krishna even more intensely by fear. Of course, on the other side, there's the pure devotee, there's the Brijvasis, and they don't have a problem being compact in thought in Krishna, but that's makes a comment like that in relation to the killing of Shishupal. So Keshi's been killed. He sent Keshi. Keshi got finished in this chapter, 37. And then Narada shows up in Vrindavan. And offers wonderful, wonderful, wonderful prayers to Krishna in various ways, and describes that by your mercy, Krishna, I know all about the truths, Krishna Tattva, in relation to you, and I also know the sequence of your events by your mercy. And that's where we are. He's describing the purpose of Krishna's appearance in the world is to kill demons. Now you killed a number of demons here, and I long to see the day when you will kill all the rest of the demons and so forth. So here's a reference to the little section that we're reading, 12 and 13, chapter 37. Sanatana Goswami writes in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, "The people of Braja are not bewildered by Krishna. The truth is that he is bewildered by them." It's Narada speaking. "When he forgot what he had to do for the demigods, I had to go to him myself and somehow remind him, 'Oh, you have some unfinished business.'" Commentary. After Krishna killed the demon, Keshi, Narada Muni went to Vrindavan and convinced Krishna that Krishna had to leave for Mathura to slay Kamsa and other enemies of his devotees. With clever praise and arguments, Narada reminded Krishna that Krishna had promised the demigods led by Brahma to rid the earth of its burden of demoniac kings. And it quotes a verse from, two verses, actually, from this chapter. Chapter 20, 37, text 13. "You, the Creator, have now descended on earth to annihilate the Daitya, Pramatha, and Rakshasa demons who are posing as kings and to protect the godly." The Pramatha group is described as a certain group of followers of Lord Shiva that are on the demoniac side of things, Pramatha. And then the next verse, text 15, says, which we're going to read, "In just 2 days, O Almighty Lord, I will see the deaths of Chanura, Mushtika, and other wrestlers, and of the elephant Kuvalyapida, and King Kamsa, all by your hand." So he's looking into the future. So now here's text 14. Looking back, "The horse demon was so terrifying that by his neighing frightened, the demigods into leaving their heavenly kingdom. But by our good fortune, you have enjoyed the sport of killing him." Vishwanath's commentary: "You have destroyed this demon for the benefit of the people, Cha. Jiva Goswami writes, the demons, such as Putana you killed previously, were evil, but Keshi was most difficult to kill. He had appeared just at this time. A little background, he says, when Kamsa asked Keshi to go, basically he said, I saved the best for last. It was my mistake. I shouldn't have sent Putana. I miscalculated the power of Krishna. Because now it's very clear, because Narada had informed him that this Krishna is the eighth child of Devaki that was prophesied to kill you. Had I known that for sure, I wouldn't have sent Putana. So, gee, sorry, Putana. But Keshi, you're the best. The others are small time compared to you. You're the best. So he assumed the form of a horse, but the demigods and Kamsa knew Keshi was the most formidable. That's what's said here. Jiva Goswami continues, because you killed him, Keshi, you are called Keshava, Vishnu Purana says. Quote, because you killed the evil Keshi, O Janardana, you will be called Keshava in the world. Now, normally, we have a different understanding of the meaning Keshava, but this is another meaning. Because Keshi and Keshava, they're kind of the same root, means hair. So you killed the Keshi demon, so you'll be called Keshava. Sanatana Goswami writes, you do not accept offenses and have given benefit to persons like me. You will do that in the future also. This is explained in 8 verses. Just now, the horse demon was killed very easily by you and was given liberation. Ni hataha. He will not return to give trouble. This produced good fortune, dishtya. You should also kill others like Chanura. Keshi's evil nature is shown. The devatas were in terror just because of his neighing, though they are freed of fear of time. Animisha. Or, fearing his coming, the devatas always glanced here and there with unblinking eyes. Animisha. Thus you are called Keshava. So, just a little bit on this word, animisha. Animisha is a phrase that's used for Lord Narayana or Mahavishnu, in that he doesn't close his eyes. He's always seeing. So when Mahavishnu is used with relation to Mahavishnu, because he's in yoga nidra, but it's not like you close your eyes and you go to sleep kind of sleep. It's a yoga nidra sleep, so his eyes are slightly open. And Naimisharanya is named after him, or after Mahavishnu or Narayan. It's the place where the Animisha Lord is his abode. That's how the name Naimisharanya comes, or one of the names where the Bhagavatam is recited. And in the Putana story, the Lord Mahavishnu that doesn't close his eyes, Krishna closed his eyes. The Animisha Lord became Nimisha. He closed his eyes when Putana came. And then there's these nice explanations of why he did so. So, unblinking eyes. The demigods, knowing Keshi was around, looked here and there feverishly for protection, just at the sound of his noise, is the neighing of the horse. Another meaning of animisha, if you recall the calculation of time by the atom, movements of the sun across one atom and so forth. So one of those tiny, tiny fragments of time is a nimisha, like the blink of an eye. That's nimisha, blinking, or a short fragment of time. And the Lord is eternal. He's animisha. No passage of time in his realm. So although they, the demigods, are free of fear of time, of course they also have to die, but that's one of the, they're called immortals because they live so long, and this term animisha is used in relation to their life, although they are subject to death. So then he, this is Sanatana Goswami, also quotes Vishnu Purana saying, because you killed the evil Keshi, O Janardana, you will be called Keshava in the world. Vishnu Purana. This is also mentioned in Harivamsa. Since it is clear and well known, it is not mentioned in the verse. And now, there's a long set of verses, 15 through 20, 10, 37, 15 through 20, and having done the preliminaries to introduce the topic that he came to see Krishna for, it's closure of his Vrindavan pastimes, the time has come, and he knows that. It's time to go to Mathura, and he knows that. So he's inspiring Krishna because he's so absorbed in his Braja Leela. It seems that perhaps he's so absorbed in bliss that he forgot this opulent purpose, secondary purpose, but killing demons that he promised the demigods that he would do. So he says, in just 2 days, Almighty Lord, I will see the deaths of Chanura, Mushtika, and other wrestlers, along with those of the elephant Kuvalyapita and King Kamsa, all by your hand. Then I will see you kill Kaliavana, Mura, Naraka, and the conch demon. And I will also see you steal the Parijata flower and defeat Indra. I will then see you marry many daughters of heroic kings after paying for them with your valor. Then, O Lord of the universe, in Dwaraka, you will deliver King Nriga from a curse and take for yourself the Shamantaka jewel together with another wife. You will bring back a Brahmana's dead son from the abode of your servant Yamaraj, and thereafter you will kill Pondraka, burn down the city of Kashi, and annihilate Dantavakra and the king of Chedi during the Rajasuya sacrifice. I shall see all these heroic pastimes, along with many others you performed during your residence in Dwaraka. These pastimes are glorified on this earth in the songs of transcendental poets. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, I am speaking about the pastimes that you perform in the future by seeing them in previous yugas, although he was seeing them otherwise also. Shankha refers to the Panchajanya. An outline of the future events is given, not all the past times. I will see you receive the Shyamantaka jewel, along with your wife Jambavati. Bhartiyaya. So Jambavati, along with Satyabhama, came in connection with the Shyamantaka jewel. But before Satyabhama was Jambavati, the daughter of Jambavan. And he comes back to Dwarka with the Shyamantaka jewel and Jambavati. And then Satrajit decides, uh-oh, I better give him the Shyamantaka jewel and my daughter. So Satyabhama. I will see you deliver the Brahmana's sons from the city of Mahakala. Now, in the translation, this is text chapter 37, so it's not Prabhupada's translation. It says, from the abode of Yamaraj. Now, you will bring back a Brahmana's dead son from the abode of your servant Yamaraj. Then in Vishwanath's commentary, it says, I will see you deliver the Brahmana's son from the city of Mahakala. And in chapter 89, the chapter summary speaks of Mahakala, and it's the Brahmana's sons, plural, not one son, and Arjuna and Krishna go to the abode of Mahavishnu, which in the chapter summary is called Mahakala. So I'm a little confused, and I don't have an answer right now, but I'll continue pursuing. The abode of Yamaraj, it's also called Mahakala. Mahakala means the great time, and certainly the abode of Mahavishnu is Mahakala, it's beyond the limits of time. So here's what the BBT writes. This is in the chapter summary for text 89. Krishna and Arjuna went to Mahakalapur, to the abode of Mahavishnu, to deliver the son of the Dwarka Brahman. And my understanding is the Brahmanas wasn't just one son, it was several sons. One after the other, and then Arjuna declared, I'll protect, and he couldn't. And so even Arjuna was astonished seeing this abode of Mahakala. So Mahakala has a meaning, and as a place, there's multiple Mahakalas. So, here we go. Jiva Goswami's commentary. Is that a garbage truck? Well, if it's garbage truck, he won't continue. He'll go away. Garbage truck kirtan. Krishna kirtan is so much nicer. Jiva Goswami's commentary on these verses. The phrase Shankha Yavana Muranam Narakasya Cha, which means of Shankha, Yavana, Mura, and Naraka, should be completed with the word Vadanam, or killing. The sentence continues until verse 20, with the statement, I will see all this. Udvaham vira kamyanam means marriage with daughters of the heroes among the Kshatriyas. Or it can mean, oh, brave Krishna, I will see your marriage with many daughters, since generally he married them because of his prowess. Therefore, it is said, virya the son, virya shulkadi lakshanam, or these marriages had a dowry of your valor. The word adi indicates the daughters also had bhakti. This was true in most cases, but sometimes only bhakti was present, as in the case of Kalindi. You freed Nriga from the sin, or papat, of taking cows from a brahmana. A curse will be mentioned later. O Lord of the universe, Jagatpate, this is said because Krishna showed his powers by riding on Garuda. And Indra and others came to Dwaraka. Mrita putra pradanam cha brahmanasya means Krishna gave the dead sons, plural, to the brahmana. Krishna would bring the sons from a place from which no one returns. Sva dhamataha. This shows his complete independence. After killing Pondraka, he would burn Kashi. I will also see other pastimes, such as your weddings to many queens simultaneously and giving mercy to Sridham. We're almost done. Oh, best of the Kurus, this is a quote from 11th Canto, Chapter 2. Oh, best of the Kurus, eager to engage in the worship of Krishna, Narada Muni stayed constantly in Dwaraka, which was protected always by the arms of Govinda. In describing these pastimes, Narada implies, oh, how fortunate. I am so fortunate, and how merciful you are. This is Narada's role in Krishna's pastimes is very important. His role in fulfilling the desire of Krishna in so many ways is very important. He's certainly very important in our lives. He instructed Vyas, and Vyas compiled the Bhagavatam, and here we have it. And in the pastimes of Krishna, he's lubricating, he's moving the pastimes forward in very unusual ways, twice visiting Kamsa of all people, and saying, you know, to do bad things of, you know, in ways that a worldly person can't understand. And specifically here is being said, he stayed in Dwaraka for a long time. Narada is considered to be a Vaikunthavasi. He considers himself a Vaikunthavasi. Yet at the same time, he has access, here we are, to go to Braja. But his Vaikunthavasi mood certainly has enormous appreciation for the Braja mood. And this is going back to this verse spoken in the evening session, chapter 12, about the cowherd boys. He's in this Dasya Bhakti category. He knows Krishna clearly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As he said at the beginning of this discussion, he's in Vrindavan, but he's saying, I know who you are. And the resident of Vrindavan don't have that same retention. They have an idea, something, something, different persons, different somethings. And even to get a hint of his divinity, it just serves to nourish their intimacy, appreciation. Oh, Krishna is so wonderful. We'll come back to Narada, but just there's a very nice, in the wonderful Krishna chapter, after the Govardhan Leela is performed, there, the chapter begins with the cowherd elders wondering, pondering, and in astonishment. They're moved by this secondary rasa of astonishment. Who is Krishna anyway? And they, one after another, just like Narada is doing here, they say this pastime, that pastime, the other past, ones that already happened, and where Krishna is showing his Aishwarya. This one, that one, the other one, the other one, the other one, the other one, so many. And so, who is he? And then they go to Nanda Maharaj, and he says, this is who he is, this is what Garga Muni said who he is. And they're pacified, their astonishment subsides, the secondary rasa subsides, when they just accept Nanda's acceptance, that he's powerful like Narayan. And it's said he'll protect the residents of Vrindavan with his powers, and he says protected, and so that's who he is. But, you know, don't get this idea that he's the personality of Godhead. I mean, he hears the sound of thunder and he starts crying and he runs. And sometimes he sees his shadow and he becomes spooked. And sometimes he hears the echo of his voice and he starts crying. And so he's a nice boy. But, you know, dismisses, he has his powers, yes. But those are powers that are invested in him by Narayan, and he's our beloved son. So the question they asked just before before Nanda began reciting Garga's words is, we have attraction for him like anything, like our own son, our beloved son, and he has attraction for us like anything. So they're noticing and acknowledging the sweetness aspect of Krishna that Narada sees as an outsider, but he doesn't have that same sweetness that they have, but he has a function in the pastimes of Krishna, and he's very happy being in Krishna's service, but he doesn't have access to the same. So we discussed this yesterday. No, on Krishna Janmashtami, knowing Krishna in truth, Krishna. Janma karma chime divyam evam yobeti tattvataha. The tattvata position, Krishna tattva, is known fully by Narada. And Krishna knows that he knows because Krishna gave him full understanding of Krishna tattva. And with that full understanding of Krishna Tattva, he's just assisting Krishna's pastimes in the way that one who knows Krishna Tattva becomes inspired. And we're to follow that. And when the qualification comes to know Krishna in full and Krishna reciprocates in the way that Krishna reciprocates with each one of us, he may, as he does with the residents of Vrindavan, cover the residents of Vrindavan with Yogamaya so they don't understand. His Aishwarya feature becomes eclipsed by that power of Krishna's Yogamaya potency because of the nature of their love. So he displays his power, which is being laid out here. And apparently, Nard arranged to speak with Krishna in a private place, knowing he doesn't want to disturb the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, very much like what Gargamuni did when Gargamuni arranged the name-giving ceremony in a private place and spoke very, very clearly about in such a way that the mood of love of Nanda would not be interfered with. But he spoke the truth at the same time. So there's different ways of seeing Krishna, and Garga sees and Narda sees, and they're respecting the residents of Vrindavan's mood. But he wants to move Krishna on. The way that the Brihad Bhagavatamrita reference says is it's not that the people of Raja become bewildered, Krishna becomes bewildered. I had to go and unbewilder him. So that he could fulfill his promise to the demigods. Now, when he was killing demons in Vrindavan, universally we hear the demigods beating kettle drums and showering flowers and making noise, celebrating. So they were aware of those, and then, but they're also waiting for the other ones. And Keshi was very formidable. I mean, we just have to take the Kamsa's word for it, and Narada's word for it, and the demigod's word for it. Because, I mean, a horse, is that as dangerous as a big bull or a whirlwind demon or Putana, the poisonous Rakshasi? I mean, seems, I mean, a horse is a horse. But he was the most powerful, at least Kamsa considered. And Narada's considering most powerful, most difficult to kill. And specifically after Krishna killed him, it's a little earlier in this chapter, he just stood there. His feet didn't move. And he was feeling, it was effortless. I mean, when you throw something that's heavy, your feet move. Feet didn't move. Effortless. And Krishna was a little astonished at his own power. That's part of how he enjoys. But he wasn't looking for praise or, you know, anything. The flow of Krishna's pastimes one to the next, you know, we're at a place where it's not completely done, but his Brajalila are about to end. And there's one celebrated commentator on the Bhagavatam that when he wrote so many 4,000 something verses on Krishna from the 10th canto, and he expired at the time Krishna left Vrindavan. He couldn't survive. No, the feelings that our great acharyas experienced. Of course, there's certainly other great acharyas that survived, like Sanatan Goswami when describing Krishna's departure through Narada. Narada says, in ordinary circles, you don't talk about Krishna's departure because it's too horrible. And people will then be afraid to become a devotee because it's so horrible. So we shouldn't speak about it. But once he starts speaking about it, he can't stop speaking about it. It goes on and on and on and on. In describing the departure of Krishna from Vrindavan in most amazing way, quite different than we find just in the verses of the Bhagavatam. Details and details and details of exchanges with the different residents of Vrindavan. Cowherd boys and the gopis and so forth before he actually leaves. The intense feeling and intense mixing in loving ways with his devotees. But the Vrindavan pastimes are about to close up. Not yet, though. There's a little bit more. So in 2 days, I long to see by his words, Krishna's absorption in his Braja Leela transitions. Of course, he could stay in Braja if he wanted to, but he transitions to moving on the next set of pastimes. So Narada's intervention in different circumstances, he's very powerful. He can change the course of Krishna's Leela. And he can change the course of people's lives. And he knows exactly how to do it. And he has full knowledge of Krishna Tattva in all respects. Very special devotee. So let's see if we have some discussion. Yeah.
Guruji, I was thinking of visiting Vrindavan when we visited in the past. Near Kusum Sarovar, there's a pond called Narada Kund.
Yeah.
And where the pastime is when Narada is dipped in the kund and comes
yes.
out as Naradi to
yes.
engage in conjugal relationship.
Yeah.
So could you... could you explain how you were saying earlier how Narada has this Vaikuntha mood or
yes.
Dasya mood. At the same time, he does seem to have this other feature of conjugal mood when transformed.
By inspiration and association, that can awaken even one who has a Vaikuntha mood. But his basic foundational mood is Vaikuntha. He's a Vaikuntha Vasi. He's not the same as those who are residents of Vaikuntha and don't have the access that he has to association and visiting Krishna and Dwarka and visiting Vrindavan. Vaikuntha residents don't have that capacity, so they're not moving along the spontaneous line. But Narada has that capacity, and through association with the Brijvasis, without going into some of the details, but he became inspired and became qualified and was blessed in this way.
The second part of the question is chronologically, when did that happen?
Which one?
When did Narada actually dip in to become Naradi chronologically? Because
the chronology, as far as I understand, is after seeing Radha in her baby form. And he became very inspired. So that's, you know, before this visit.
It's very interesting. So he takes on that role, that service, and as in conjugal relationship, and then goes back to being Narada.
He has service to do. He has lots of service to do, and he's still doing. He's not going around as Naradi. He's going around as Narada. I can't offer an explanation of, you know, how that works. Your wife.
Maharaj, a couple questions. I was confused hearing that the demigods are not afraid of death. I just always...
Demigods are not...
afraid of death.
It's not exactly what it says. They're not subject to time. Let's go back with how it's translated at least. The devatas were in terror just because of his neighing, though they are free of fear of time. So you're right. Free of fear of time. Animisha. So now?
I just assumed that, you know, unless you're a pure devotee, you're afraid of death. And the demigods, we know, are still in a mixed position.
One can say, I mean, Brihad Bhagavatamrita certainly describes their fear of death, describes Brahma's fear of death. And on the other hand, Brahma's a pure devotee. He's the head of our sampradaya. So you can take it either way. They don't have fear of death because they know their position as a devotee, or they have fear of death because they know they're going to die. And everything with their demigod position will be lost. And you can take it the other way. And if, you know, one of these things with having a different realization or different perspective says, if it's this, it can't be that. If it's that, it can't be this. And you can't have both. Is it this or is it that? So this seems to be one of those situations where an acharya in not just, you know, one of the prabhus over there somewhere, in the speculation gallery, but these great acharyas, they have their in samadhi or in pure devotion to the personality of Godhead, they have a particular appreciation or realization of the Lord's pastimes and the devotees of the Lord. And over there, there's another that has the same pastime, the same situation, and has another picture of the Sanskrit or what the pastime is indicating and so on. And the, you know, our tendency is to say, I really is inspired by this one, or I'm really inspired by that one, or, you know, please make it clear to me, is it this one or that one? Because I'm ready for this one or that one, and I'd like to be persuaded if it's that one, why it is so, because, so, our acharyas don't just write things, out of whim, but there's a particular realization and purpose behind their explaining the pastime and Krishna empowering the demigods in some cases to not be afraid or to speak of them as being not afraid. And then over there, another acharya is looking at the same situation, the same set of demigods, and saying they're afraid. So then it gets into that place where, how do we handle? So that just as Krishna is Akhila Rasamrita Murti, he's the reservoir of all rasa, and sometimes that reservoir of all rasa appears like this and appears like that. So he's likened to Vaidurya Mani, that sometimes appears this color, sometimes appears that color, and all colors are within the Vaidurya Mani. At different times, different persons see the same stone differently, and that's because it's the nature of the stone. So also the pure devotees, sometimes, and their realization is sometimes like this. So it's completely permissible. It's nothing to be, I mean, to want to pursue it further is fine. Your question is appropriate. And there may be some reasonable explanation of why this acharya says this and that acharya says that, other than just, well, that's their realization. You know, a scriptural basis for their saying this and saying that. There's many such examples. But the resolution of those many such examples is, I made reference to this a couple of times this past week. Text 61 from Sri Brahma Samhita. Yadrashi yadrashi shraddha siddhi bhavati tadrashi. According to shraddha, you know, yata tata. According to shraddha, realization comes. That's Bhakti Siddhanta's translation. Siddhi bhavati tadrashi. So one has this appreciation according to their faith, and they get some realization and they express it. And another has another faith inspired by Krishna, a certain realization, and they express it. And we just appreciate these are not speculations. These are exalted personalities, pure devotees that see Krishna and Krishna's devotees in different ways. So one can speak of the demigods as having no fear or having fear. They have no fear because they have Krishna's shelter. Or they have fear because there's some tinge of material desire and thus bodily identification and thus fear.
Marj, sometimes we hear there's a difference between these eternal pastimes, the Nitya Lila, and the temporary or temporarily manifested pastimes, the Nainitika Lila.
Yes.
Maybe you could share, I sometimes recall hearing there's a unique asset of the pastimes that are performed in Gokula, that there's actually some special moods that are distinct from the eternal pastimes. Or is there, maybe you could touch on any difference?
There's many. I mean, you know, the popular one that we're all kind of mildly or modestly aware of is there's potential, there's potency within the occasional pastime to the worldly pastimes to assist the covered soul for becoming free from the obstacles or anartas in their spiritual progress. There's a particular verse, for example, in Krishna Samhita where Bhaktisiddhanta is describing Denukasura, and he's ass-like. So the ass demon was unable to reach, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's explanation, he was unable to reach the tall fruits, so he didn't want anyone to have tall fruits. He was envious and very ass-like in his protectiveness. So similarly, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, there are persons who have no access to the sweetness of Krishna's pastimes, and so they don't want others to have access to the sweetness of Krishna's pastimes. And they're ass-like. And there's obstruction. And Krishna helps one become free from that. But it's, we know who kills Denukasura. So, it requires, so, that's one of the features, you're back to your question. So one of the features of the temporary pastimes is the helping the sadhaka to become free from anartas. There's another, and another is Krishna nourishing the secondary rasas, like astonishment and others, or fear, anxiety, Krishna nourishing the secondary rasas in his devotees by these occasional pastimes. Because in the spiritual world, there's no demons and so forth. Not just demons. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says even Krishna's leaving Vrindavan going to Mathura, because he's always in Vrindavan. There's no leaving Vrindavan, just as there's no birth pastime. So he uses this term, I forget, seeming error, vibhrama something. Huh? Vibhrama vilas, that may that be it. So it's a bewilderment. But in the occasional pastimes, the bewilderment is to nourish bhakti of the people that are the bhaktas in Vrindavan. And he explains, it's to remind them of what's existing in the Krishna loka or in his unmanifest pastimes, that these events actually happen. He shows them in each day of Brahma to nourish that feeling when it's all the rest of the time it's the unmanifest pastimes, that those feelings are, you know, supported by Krishna's leaving and Krishna's thising and thatting and Krishna's taking birth, and the occasional pastimes nourish the apricot rasa. Whereas it looks like some vibhrama. They're bewildered by the circumstance, pastimes that are bewildering. It looks like, you know, Krishna's killing Agasura. Excuse me. Krishna's killing Arishtasura and Vyomasura, killing a calf and killing a bull. And Sri Radhika remarked, it was interesting to hear Krishna and Balaram debating, well, if we kill the calf, then people will criticize. Remember that discussion? And Krishna says, once he's killed, then that was Balaram's concern. People may talk. Do you know what Krishna did? He broke Dharma. But then they'll understand that he's a demon once he's killed, so it'll be okay. Okay. So, people may become bewildered. There are people that become bewildered. There are people that become bewildered by the Nitya Lila, by Rasa Dance, etc. Oh, Krishna's bad. Oh, Krishna this. So it's a risk on his part to show his eternal pastimes in a world where people don't see eternal. They see temporal. And not only temporal, they see distorted. They can't see. Anyway, so those are some of the reasons. Yeah.
Pooja Singh Mataji asks, we heard that Keshi was the strongest demon sent by Kamsa. Were the demons that Kamsa sent progressively stronger and stronger? And does this have any significance on how some of our anarthas may be more difficult to address than others?
It doesn't, I haven't read that sequentially stronger, 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 stronger.
This is a comment from Kalindi Mataji. I didn't get to read your offering to Srila Prabhupada this year because there wasn't any. We didn't have a program at the temple for Janmashtami this year, but I was lucky that I had my service the 2 days Janmashtami and Srila Prabhupada appearance day. All they did was cook lots of prasadam and distribute to whoever came. No India trip this year. Please be safe. COVID-19.
So just a comment.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Next questions from Hema Suryavamshi Mataji. How to tolerate others, sometimes we feel heavy to be with them, but we have no choice. And on the other hand, we feel guilty as we get or carry ill feelings for them in the mind and heart.
Well, there's many things to say, but as I was hearing the question, I was thinking, one of the ways to help to deal with people that are difficult is to think, you know, there's probably some people that feel that I'm difficult to deal with. And what would I like them to do when they feel that I'm difficult to deal with? So think those thoughts and then you have an idea how to deal with the people that are difficult to deal with. Do unto others, the golden rule principle. You may, keep some distance, and forgive, but also, pray that they take shelter more, and your prayer will be more effective if you take shelter more, but pray they take shelter more in Krishna, and become relieved of whatever it is that's causing the irritation. that makes them behave in a difficult way, just like yourself. Fix your heart first is the message here.
So, Matulya Mataji, Maharaj, by hearing the pastimes of killing the demons that have potency to remove those anarthas from our hearts, does this mean if I keep hearing these pastimes of killing demons, one day these sticky anarthas will be removed from my heart?
Well, there's the quality of hearing, not just a quantity of hearing. But yes, there's potencies in the pastimes.
This is from Rupalas Prabhu. Are there different sets of demigods in different universes, such that demigods in some universes may be completely purified and not afraid of death?
If anything like that's possible, but that's not the rule. Go ahead. That's it. Anything? Because you speak softly, you're probably going to have to remove your mask.
Sharampa Swami, you were highlighting Narada's very unique position as a devotee, and just one thought came to me. It's rather extraordinary that he's directly communicating with Krishna his reflection on the Keshi demon and the strength of the Keshi demon, because no other devotee does that in direct communication with Krishna, commenting on the particular demon or what was enacted. I mean, directly. I mean, the cowherd boys, they're participants in observation and they extol the greatness of Krishna, and the residents hear about the pastime, but Narada is directly giving his reflections to Krishna. It's so interesting.
Yes, it's very interesting.
That's what came to mind.
His role, his relationship is very special. I mean, it's special in a different way than what's special about the cowherd boys. The special is they're just playing. And Narada doesn't have that access to just playing. So they're very special in that way. The intimacy aspect. And Narada is very special in his, you know, he has the big picture of everything. And he's helping Krishna. What Krishna wants is to move on. And then once he moves on, then Krishna is going to feel separation from Vrindavan. It's really special. Something that I've learned from spending all this time is there's layers and layers and layers, but why Krishna didn't return. And there's multiple reasons. But he made a promise, and he keeps his promise. So the promise was fulfilled. His internal reflection, compliments of our acharyas, is after I kill all the demons, I'll return. And when he returns, he spends 2 months. And at the end of the 2 months, the Prakat Leela, the residents of Vrindavan, enter into their Aprakat stage. I mean, it doesn't say exactly, just like, because it's not just the humans, coward men and coward ladies and girls and boys and children. It's all these residents. Because when Krishna goes from Gokul to Vrindavan, his enthusiasm is to be with all of his devotees in all these different rasas that are his eternal associates. And he's now bringing the Prakat Leela to all these devotees. Birds and you name it. The trees and the creepers and the this and the that's. And he's very enlivened and they're very enlivened. And so the end of the Prakat Leela is described this way. three things. They enter into their uppercut manifestation, including Krishna, with them. Because his Vrindavan Prakat Leela is over. He does two more months of Prakat Leela and then uppercut Leela. And second is, a Vimana descends. This is reference from Vishnu Purana or Padma Purana, I think. And takes them all back to Goloka, Krishna Loka. They return to their eternal pastimes in Krishna Loka. And the demigods are sent back to their respected places because they were asked to come and assist, and they go, or their partial expansions or whatever, go back to the demigod positions. And Krishna goes to Dwarka to finish the Dwarka Leela. I mean, it's pastimes. And it's very, very special. Very, very special pastimes. And Narada understands the big picture, and the resident of Vrindavan, they're just engaged in his eternal pastimes. Prakat and uprakat. So, how exalted is he in special, and how exalted are they in special? You know, to be a pure devotee is special, any way you cut it. But he has a role to play in his pastimes, including the, you know, the pastime of bringing conditioned souls to the feet of Krishna. And who is more dear to Krishna than someone who does that, according to Krishna? And the cowherd boys don't go on Sankirtan. Or the gopis, they go in rasa dance. And they, the elders, they do what they do. And that's pleasing to Krishna. So then we have this, well, which is more pleasing to Krishna? They're both more pleasing to Krishna. Different ways of looking at it. But Narada's function, very unique. And one who's following in the path, in the line of Narada, that's us trying to, is, it's a very elevated function, and it definitely requires empowerment to do it even a little bit, what to speak of successfully. Okay, we're going to end. Srila Prabhupada ki? Yeah.